time again.
Well, I thought I was synthesizer, but I always thought Herla was like one behind me, but okay.
I was note taker 2 calls ago, organizer last call. So I think that makes me moderator this call.
Okay.
Yeah, well, somewhere along the line, we might have gotten out of our rotation when Jackie so rudely went off and had her baby. That might be what's throwing us off.
Okay.
So anyway, I plan on moderating today, so I will do that. So my understanding of what we were supposed to be doing for today is we're trying to figure out how to frame our literature review. And I believe it's still actually a question as to whether this literature review is simply the introduction to a paper or whether it is a paper in and of itself. Do you guys have that same sense, or did you feel like we had settled more on one or the other?
I thought that we were using parts of what we've done as an intro to our actual study paper, but I also thought that we were going to dig deeper and do a separate literature review, and that was what we were outlining for today.
Okay. That certainly seems reasonable to me, and if we could get a second paper out of it, I would certainly be happy with that, because I need papers.
Yes, add it to the list.
Yeah. So, okay, so then let's keep this discussion with a independent lit review paper in mind, and then we can always pull from this as our intro.
Well, I was going to say, I would think that if we were trying to do it from the way that Lee and I were supposed to try to approach the problem, that it would definitely be a separate paper. So, I mean, I don't think since ours is just focusing on the sampling side of things, if we were looking at the entire cycle of investigation, I don't think we would do that as our intro.
Right.
Does that make sense at all?
Since we're going to focus on a separate paper, can I make one comment on something regarding our actual study that we're doing before we get into a discussion of a separate paper?
Yes.
One of the pieces in the statistical literacy article was talking about how if a listener or if the person who's reading is not familiar with the context, then they're going to have much more difficulty with being able to question the results. And I'm wondering if one of the questions that we developed was one for which they didn't really have any knowledge.
That was the food irradiation one, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering if we should not be using that as part of our study. Because if we end up getting results where they're, like for the bad sample one, are we going to be able to determine that we're getting results because they don't know it's a bad sample or because they don't know the context? Are we going to be able to distinguish between the two? It just got me thinking about that question when I was reading through the article.
Yeah, that's something. I think that is something to think about. So should we go back and look at the original results and see if there's another? Because that we were taking that as a neutral question.
Yes.
For the harder ones to come up with, so should we try and find another neutral question?
Well, I don't know that we need to do it now since we're going to focus on the others. I just wanted to get it out there. Maybe it's something we can think about between calls.
That's a good idea. All right. Anyone have any other questions or things about the methodology before we move on to the literature review? Jackie, I saw that you did send through your IRB thing that you had sent off, and I have sent something off. I've been in contact with my IRB lady to figure out if I need to do an amendment to what I had before or if I need to do a whole new application. So she's got all of our questions, and she's looking at them. I sent them to her Monday and have not heard back, so hopefully I'll hear something soon. So I guess we're still in a hold pattern with that, which is good time to move forward with the lit review. So then for today, we're thinking about an independent lit review paper, which I think is supposed to frame our problem. So the way I was looking at it is kind of, it's supposed to frame how our problem fits within the larger scope of, there were two things that were larger scopes we were considering. One was the framework of statistical literacy thinking, literacy reasoning and thinking, and the other was the cycle of investigation, the process of conducting a study. And we're supposed to think about how our problem fits within that framework, which in turn should then help motivate why this is an important problem. So that was kind of how I approached things. Does anyone, between the two groups, Tara and I looked at statistical literacy, reasoning, and thinking. Jackie and Lee looked at the cycle of investigation. Does anyone have a preference as to who starts?
No.
Okay. Well, Jack, did everyone see Jackie's outline that was emailed before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, to let you all know, I uploaded something to Google Docs, so if you want to open up your Google Docs page, you should see something called Lit Review Outline 1, which has some of my notes. So if everybody has Jackie's stuff up, do we want to start there while you're pulling up Google Docs?
Sure.
Is that okay, Jackie?
Since ours didn't really have a paper to go with, I first was just trying to look up how the cycle of investigation is defined in different spots, so sort of a reference of where I looked to get that stuff. So they kind of have this of five bigger kind of ideas of identifying the problem. So what I was trying to do is figure out, I think the goal was sort of where would confirmation bias possibly play a role in sort of each of the different cycles. So sort of with identifying the problem, first of all, like the black circle bullets are things that were on the website, and so my arrow bullets are more of what I added. So with understanding the problem, are they actually, like when you're actually setting things up, are you already looking for just your own possibility or thinking that more than one would happen so that could possibly already be sort of the first place where bias could happen? And how we go about answering the question, are we literally trying to set ourselves up to find what we want? With planning the study, I think this is, between the plan, the study, and the collecting the data, I think is sort of where the sampling part would come in. I think those kind of go hand in hand. So it's when you're trying to figure out how to collect the sample, you have to know what you need to know to answer that question and how you're going to go about getting it. But the collecting the data, I didn't first see anything when you're actually collecting the data, once you decided how you're going to get it, of where confirmation bias could be, because I kind of assumed that when you're recording the data, you're not doing anything funny to it. I don't know if that's a place where we need to worry about it or not. I think that part of it is in the analysis. What was weird about the site I looked up, with the cycle of investigation, this is actually where it had identifying your hypotheses. Where I always think that should be actually the first thing you do. So I don't know if I like their cycle of investigation all that well personally. But since this is sort of where you're doing your descriptive and inferential statistics, just trying to see if you're only trying to represent one side of things or if you're actually trying to look at things more objectively and see things from more than one side for that. Conclusions overall, I think, is where we could possibly be seeing that. So... at the very bottom, I have sort of how I thought the literature review possibly would go for each of the sections. And then I think the first thing we have to do is define what confirmation bias would look like in each of those sections, by either giving examples of ones that we could find in documents or articles, or sort of giving a hypothetical example of what an example of confirmation bias would look like.
So, Jackie, sorry. Were you doing confirmation bias more from the perspective of the person who's actually setting up the study?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you say confirmation bias, what it would mean in each part of, so I guess I'm not quite following. Just how it would sort of pervade the whole thing, each part of the cycle. I don't know if you understand my question. I'm not sure I understand my question.
I think the Nickerson article addressed some of this stuff.
Okay.
It looked at how, I think the different parts of the Nickerson article got at some of this.
Okay.
I mean, they did do some of the examples and stuff like that of
okay.
Where it was when, like, they were thinking through the problems and stuff like that.
Okay, sorry.
I thought I remember Tali Lynn saying of how could we see confirmation bias happening at each point part of the investigational cycle.
Okay.
So granted, I don't think at every single stage we might see it.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how that would, because I was looking at the different steps, and I was like, okay, I'm not sure how.
I just sometimes wonder, you know, just identifying the problem, is the problem in itself the only reason you're looking at it is because it's going against what you already believe in the first place?
Yeah. yeah, I'm sorry, I guess I'm not remembering everything from the Nickerson article right now.
Well, I might be wrong. Jackie, you read the Nickerson article too, right?
Yeah, oh. I just had a, kind of a lot of different examples, and it talked about sort of defining what they meant by confirmation bias in the first place, because it said, sort of said that that was one of the harder things first, that people have, you know, a different definition of that. And so they made sure they defined exactly what they meant by confirmation bias. So I think if we were going to do something similar, we'd have to not only define it, but try to give an example of what we meant by our definition.
Oh, don't trust my brain at the moment. I'm sure I'm not remembering correctly at all. So
well, I could be mixing a few of the different articles together in my head as well.
But. Yeah. Although I think most of the articles that we read did start with confirmation bias has several definitions. so I think people agree that this is kind of a name that's been, or a label that's been given to several similar or related phenomenon. Because I know, like, when I think of confirmation bias, I think of the definition that people seeking evidence. And I've always interpreted that to mean that they're looking for evidence that already exists. They're not trying to create evidence. So I've been thinking of this, if you put it in the consumer-producer framework, I've been thinking of it more as a consumer problem as opposed to a producer problem. But to some extent, I don't think it would necessarily be an exclusive consumer problem. To some extent, people may, when they are designing a study, I mean, they are, I guess, to some extent, that's confirmation bias defined, because you do have a hypothesis that you're looking to go out and find evidence to support to some extent. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the whole motivation for the scientific problem in the cycle of inquiry is you have this hypothesis and you want to see, does the data support it? And it could make sense that it could come up when you plan the study, not necessarily that it would be explicit deception in planning a study, but you might be kind of implicitly biased towards picking measures or only measuring those variables that would support your argument. And maybe you might not think as much about those variables that could disprove your argument. So you just may not measure those as well. So it could be both a consumer and a producer problem. I think it's interesting, though, because I think the cycle of investigation probably does lend itself a little bit more to a producer interpretation, imagining someone implementing this cycle, whereas when I was going through the SLRT thing, I definitely took more of a consumer approach. I don't know if you did the same thing, Tara, or if you didn't really draw a distinction between consumer and producer.
No, I definitely did a consumer also. My impression, based on reading through the abstracts and everything when we were setting up the bibliography, was that you definitely have the producer side, you have the consumer side in terms of them being able to recognize when something when results could be generalized and when they couldn't. But then there was also a third piece that came in was whether or not people even believe that you can use the whole scientific method to perform a scientific study and believe the results from it. So my impression looking through the abstracts were that there were three different components to the confirmation bias stuff. And I used the latter two when I went through the statistical literacy piece. I didn't do the producer one at all.
I guess I could say from when I was trying to do this, it was hard for me to think about the consumer and anything beyond after we already have data. I mean, I guess I have a harder time of thinking how consumers themselves have issues with this, with planning the study, if they're not the ones planning it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the issues with consumers is can they recognize what are better choices and what are worse choices that the planner made. So it is all after the fact, but they could still recognize if something was planned well or not.
So it seems like if we would take this approach, doing the whole scientific method approach and framing our work around it, that we would be able to incorporate all of the ideas of confirmation bias. We could look at the producer within the identifying the problem and planning the study, and then we could bring in the consumer piece when we talk about the conclusions, and we could include the piece about do they even believe that the scientific method is, that you can believe the results of the scientific method. We had some articles in our bibliography that dealt with that. But that seems like it's a huge scope.
Yeah, that was what I was just thinking.
Something interesting to think about, though, at least. Does anyone, Jackie, was there anything else you wanted to say about this, or does anyone else have any questions, comments, before we move on to the other framework?
I was going to say that I found this sort of hard to do, personally.
Looking at it within this framework, you mean?
I mean, because it's, I mean, I think I was having a very hard time trying to understand how students can interpret it until I understand where it could happen if they were to go through the whole thing themselves in the first place. I mean, I think to even possibly understand the consumer point of view, I have to understand the producer point of view first. I think that's where I have an easier time jumping to. If I was conducting the study, where would I possibly commit those problems?
Well, yeah, and I was just sitting thinking about this, and I was wondering how much do we really, I don't know that I focus as much as I should on the producer side of it in my classes. I mean, I don't know.
Are your classes more geared towards the statistical literacy piece?
Yeah, I mean, they're for business majors and nursing majors, and, you know, they're more for consumers of statistics versus producers of statistics, so that's the focus of the class. So, I mean, I do a little bit with, you know, some experimental design and, you know, surveys and that sort of thing, but it's such a minimal part of the course. I don't know. It was just something I was thinking about as we're talking about this.
How are the others organized?
The other...
Jackie and Herla. How are yours organized?
I'm not really sure. Mine's, you know, a typical methods class. So we do have the unit on surveys, and we have the unit on experimental design, and everything else in between is how to conduct inference. And so I think it's more producer-based, but it's kind of producer-light, if that makes sense. because I really don't know how many of these kids will actually be going out and collecting their own data, producing their own studies one day. But it's certainly more geared towards research study, either production or consumption, than, say, like newspaper article consumption. If that makes sense.
That makes sense. And I think my class is very similar. I mean, our book is organized around the scientific method. So we relate each chapter back to one of the steps that Jackie has outlined. And we go through the process. But, again, most of our students aren't going to actually be producing any data.
You know what might be a good article to look at for this? I came across it in my references, but it was kind of long, so I didn't tackle the whole thing. But there's a Wild and Sancook article from 1999 in International Statistical Review. It's called Statistical Thinking and Empirical Inquiry. And they list it. It's the PPDAC cycle, problem, plan, data analysis, conclusions, which is essentially everything Jackie has, just different labels. And actually, it's fairly, it's all very similar. But they at least then cast it, they're looking more, how does statistical thinking fit into this? So it almost crosses the two, which might also be the two frameworks we were looking at, which might also be good to look at. My impression, when I was reading through, I started with Gall's article, 1999 article, about statistical literacy. And I was reading through and trying to decide, is this a basic literacy problem? And it encompasses a fair amount of literacy, but it's kind of that area where literacy overlaps with the other two domains, because it's not just understanding the definitions, it's also being able to critically evaluate. So it does touch on those higher order thinking skills, the more the reasoning and the statistical thinking. So the Wild and Sancook article could be something good to look at. It, like I said, it is unfortunately kind of long. And I still find the long article somewhat daunting just to get into. But that could be a good one to look at to complement this. I think it comes with a bunch of discussions, too. So that may be what makes it longer. That could be a good one to look at to either continue down the cycle road or even bridge the two frameworks. Tara, do you want to start with your notes on the statistical literacy, reasoning, and thinking, or did you want me to start with mine? Do you have a preference?
I can start with mine, but I didn't type mine out.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. You're going to have to listen to me later on.
Test our listening skills.
For the statistical literacy, actually, I have a lot of what you had on your statistical literacy according to Gall article.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that where we came in, is it a he or she?
Gall is a he.
Okay. He divided statistical literacy up into the two pieces, the ability to interpret and critically evaluate statistical information, and then the ability to discuss or communicate reactions. I thought that the confirmation bias came into the second piece when we talked about the ability to provide an opinion or to express concerns about the acceptability of given conclusions. I thought that what we were looking at fell under that category. And then under his knowledge components, I thought that he divided up into five knowledge components. Literacy skills, I didn't really think applied to us. Under statistical knowledge, I thought that applied to us because he gets at knowing why data are needed, how they can be produced. He talks about the advantage of probability sampling, knowing when it's appropriate to generalize about a population from the sample data. And then he said that it requires knowledge of aspects of planning a survey or experiment, such as what constitutes a good sample. And so I thought that our material could be incorporated under the statistical knowledge component. And then in the other place, mathematical knowledge, not so much. His context knowledge, I thought that we could fall under there. When he talks about how context is a source of meaning and the basis for interpretation of the obtained results, and the proper interpretation of statistical messages depends on the ability to place messages in context and to access the student's world knowledge. And then I also thought we could fall under critical skills, where they have to reflect upon the alternative interpretations of the conclusions. Those were things that I wrote down for the knowledge component. And then he also had a dispositional elements piece, which included a critical stance and a beliefs and attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And under the beliefs and attitudes, he distinguished between emotions and attitudes and beliefs. Obviously, the belief bias the confirmation bias would come under beliefs. And I thought when he was talking about how you have to accept that properly planned studies have potential to lead to better or more valid conclusions than those obtained by relying on anecdotal data, there was, in the Nickerson article, there was a piece on confirmation bias that dealt with that. I think it was Nickerson. There was another article that dealt completely with that idea also as it relates to confirmation bias. So I thought there were a few different places that we could incorporate it using his general definitions and the components that he divided it up into. But that was really as far as I got. So I don't know how much is that. I didn't really read through yours. Is that consistent pretty much with what you pulled out of it?
Yeah. Were you guys able to upload or download the doc that I posted? Or do you just want me to email it around real quick?
You got it.
Wait, where exactly is it?
It's on Google. It should be on Google Docs, and I should have given everyone access. But now for some reason wait, let me try refreshing.
It had a little new next to it when I went there.
Yeah, it's posted today. It's called Lit Review Outline 1.
Okay, it doesn't like me. Maybe if I sign out and sign back in. New features. Yeah, I see notes, updated research methodology, flowchart, and intuitive. It doesn't. I have nothing since October 1st.
Did I share it with the wrong email address for you?
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, lvflossen@mac.com.
Let me check.
Or you could just send it to me at lvflossen@mac.com.
No, it was your capital.
Oh.
So I will, lvflossen. I think what I do is I just go into one of our emails. Sending it right now. Send. So basically what I will do, I will start slowly talking through things, and then hopefully it'll pop up and you'll be able to open it. I did pretty much agree with Tara's take on the Gall article. So I mentioned this before to, I mentioned this before to Tara and Jackie. My article or my outline looks long and impressive, but really all I did was just copy and paste large text in.
Excellent.
Because I didn't have the mental faculty to really synthesize it all this week. So what I did, I tried to outline what the article was talking about. And then the highlighted parts are the parts where I think our problem fits in. And then within each quote that I put in that I found interesting, I tried to put in bold the parts that I thought were really particularly relevant to us. Although the bold is kind of hard to see on Google Docs. So I apologize for that. But yeah, I agree. In terms, he has the knowledge elements and the dispositional elements. In terms of the statistical knowledge, I definitely think that the first component of that, knowing why data are needed and how they can be produced, he talks about how, what I think we, after I put all this together, I'll give you the punchline and then I'll describe it. After I put all this together, I decided, and I think this might be down towards the bottom. Yeah, if you scroll down towards the bottom of the document, it's on the very last, the top of the very last page and then the bottom of the second to last page, I put my take on how our project fits. And I'll mention some of these other articles. I think really what we are talking about, if you look at the second bullet point of my take on how our project fits, we seem to be focusing on this aspect of critical evaluation, and this is taken from the consumer point of view. So if we're talking about consumers, if we put it in the consumer light, we're thinking about the critical evaluation of research, particularly the relationship between the quality of the sampling method and the appropriateness of the conclusion, and then thinking of the wording of our questions and the way our research problems were structured, what we're really getting at are two ideas. One is that the conclusions are meaningless if the sampling method is biased, and two, similarly, the conclusions are not valid if they're too broad for the scope of the sample. Those seem to be the two things we were really trying to manipulate in our research question, or really trying to get at in our research question. And we think this problem will interact with the effect of the strength of the opinion, where if a student is faced with a conclusion that agrees with a strong opinion, then they won't critically evaluate. Gall talks about this need to spontaneously invoke a list of worry questions about saying, were the data collected in a valid way? Are there alternative explanations? So if they agree, they won't critically evaluate. And then Chance had this best chance, and I'll talk about that article in a minute, had this great quote, which I loved, where she said that students would miss the relevant statistical information and instead meander in a forest of irrelevant or anecdotal information. So I think that's what we're talking about. And then I could probably put a mirror bullet to this, saying that when a conclusion disagrees with a strong opinion, then they might rely too much on the worry questions and the alternative explanations without actually thinking about the statistical aspects. So it's kind of, that's kind of the flip side of the coin too. So that's what I took away. And I think the Gall article talks a lot about the statistical knowledge being the quality of the sampling, being able to assess the quality of the sampling method, and then the critical stance being able to question research. I did look at a few other articles. There's one about Watson and Calling by Watson and Callingham, and the one thing I like about Jane Watson and the article she does is she actually bases her stuff on data, where a lot of these other people are just kind of basing it on their expertise. But the Watson article, she did an empirical study of middle and elementary school students, and she identified 6 levels of statistical literacy, which the reason I copied and pasted, I had to copy and paste her table in because I couldn't put copy and paste the text in itself. I thought that these might be useful as a way to frame, like evaluate our responses when we got them. So that's why those are in there. And then I also looked at a series of articles defining statistical literacy, reasoning, and thinking. A series of articles by Deb Rumsey, Joan Garfield, and Beth Chance. And then Bob Del Moss wrote a comment on them. It was in one of the JSEs in 2002. And I actually really like Deb Rumsey's interpretation of the entire framework of literacy, reasoning, and thinking. I think she did a very good job in one sentence of kind of describing what these things are, which is to some extent an oversimplification, but at the same time it's a nice place to start. And she divides literacy into 2 components. One is statistical competency, which is the basic understanding of definitions. And then the other goes beyond that, and it's this idea of statistical citizenship, which is then making use of those definitions so that you can be a functioning member of an information-laden society. And I think that what we're really focusing on, again, is it goes beyond just the basic understanding into this idea of evaluating, questioning research. So I think we're talking about literacy, but we're also going beyond that. If you scroll, I summarize all those articles. If you scroll down on the 4th page, there's a Venn diagram that Bob Del Moss presented, and I think this is the accepted model now of statistical literacy reasoning and thinking, at least as far as Joan Garfield and Bob Del Moss and people in those kind of school of thought agree. So I think we're in kind of the intersection. We're definitely in the intersection between the green and the red circles, and we may even be in the intersection between all three. So that was kind of my take on things. And again, the highlighted parts are where I really think our problem fits, and then the bold parts were quotes that kind of stood out to me as particularly relevant. So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, questions, kind of comments? Quick personal opinion, of course, based upon the two different things. It seems like when we talked about, granted I didn't do near the beautiful outline that either of you did, it just seems like we have a lot more going the other way. And I think a much better focus of where we fit in with the statistical literacy side of things, because I really do think if we try to encompass the producers and the consumers, we're biting off a lot. And I think we have to understand consumers first when it comes to how they're understanding it, and then figuring out how we can produce things better to get rid of that stuff. My opinion.
Comments on that?
I think I agree with Jackie. I think if we try to do all, it's going to be way too much. And we're all already overwhelmed with everything that we have to do. So.
I think I would more or less say the same thing. It seems like we've got a much better focus, I think. And I'm trying to say here? A little bit deeper critical thought on some of these, where with the other, the statistical investigation, we're still sort of skimming the surface. We've put a lot of thought into, what we've been looking at here with the sampling and everything. And I just feel like we're further along with the stuff that Tara and Herla did. I don't know if that makes any sense whatsoever. I'm not sure.
I mean, part of our goal of this, I think, was to figure out which way we were going to feel better about approaching and which way we felt better about sort of fitting in. And so I think after trying to even, and granted, I don't know, I know we said we each had the focus one, and obviously I didn't look at this as the literacy one, and I don't know if Herla or Tara had a chance to look at this way. I just found it hard to even, in a sense, figure out where to start. So I kind of feel like we'd almost be starting from scratch.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was trying to say.
There we go. We're thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think this statistical literacy reasoning and thinking model is, I think, to some extent, the accepted model. Interestingly, I really don't know how much empirical evidence there is to support this model, what these constructs are, how they relate, and the Venn diagram kind of presents a little bit of a hierarchy. I always think it looks like Mickey Mouse tilting his head to the side a little. But it's the idea of literacy provides a foundation for reasoning and thinking, and that thinking skills are the kind of highest order skills to some extent, but there is overlap between them. So it definitely would give us a well-established framework to work within. It's something that I think the members of the RAB would be very familiar. I mean, obviously, they'd be familiar with the cycle of inquiry, too, but I think there's a lot more current work about literacy, reasoning, and thinking right now. Like, that's kind of what's going on in stat ed, is we really are trying to piece these things out. And I think we definitely have an important, I think our problem is an important aspect of this framework. In the idea of this critical stance. In my mind, to some extent, what I kept coming back to was the quote that data beat anecdotes. And I think if you were really to boil our problem down to a single phrase, that is the essence of what we're looking at, is we want to know, do people understand that? Or are they going to default to their contextual and anecdotal knowledge when faced with a conflict in opinion? And I think that's really what we're trying to get at here. And that was really the heart. If we think back to what started us down this road, the Watson article where they had the problem with the cars, the woman who wanted to buy the new car and should she buy the Toyota or the Honda, and what it was really supposed to be was should she believe the data or should she believe the anecdotes, but instead people got distracted and they couldn't make that distinction. And so they ended up relying on the anecdotes because that was more familiar to them. And so I think that's kind of the heart of what we're talking about here. And I think people within the field of stat ed as a whole will recognize that as an important aspect of the field. So I think it definitely motivates our problem as saying this is important to investigate further. So it seems to some extent then, like we're in agreement that we should pursue the literacy, reasoning, and thinking framework.
Yes.
I think so.
So that means we need to add all of the articles that you have referenced here, at least into our concept maps.
Yes.
And kind of rework them.
Now, in terms of the pragmatic aspect of handling the lit review and keeping an annotated bibliography, Jackie and I had tried that Zotero thing, although I'm looking and I'm noticing I had problems with Firefox this week and I had to have my tech guy like fix it, and I noticed Zotero is now missing. And I know, Tara, you had some reservations about Firefox, at least at home. Do we want to try using something like Zotero that's really meant to be a bibliographical? I'm not sure. That doesn't seem like a word as I'm saying it. A bibliographical software manager? Or do we want to stick with something like Google Docs? To me, one of the advantages of using something that's really a software that's meant to manage bibliographies is you can search better, you can sort better, whereas Google Docs, you can search reasonably well, but it's difficult to sort, especially if things are in a text, like a document format. We don't have to go with Zotero. I know Holly Lynn had mentioned a few other free options that we could look into.
I just did a search on reference management software,
mm-hmm.
And as much as I don't like to use Wikipedia, they have a table that summarizes them all and talks about whether or not they're free, whether or not they have open sources, if they're web-based or not,
mm-hmm.
And it looks like there's actually a lot of them that are not just plugins to Firefox.
So maybe we should pick something like that and start the process. It's going to be daunting at first, but I think it'll pay great dividends in the end. Start the process of moving these summaries over and having all the bibliographical information put into one of these management softwares.
I think so. I would agree.
What is next semester looking like for all of us? I know this semester we all seem to be looking forward to the end of it. Is next semester going to be, I mean, is anyone going to have more time next semester?
I'm taking on a new class prep.
I'm at the same schedule I have now, plus a brand new class I've never taught before.
Oh, that's wonderful. So we're going to be even worse off next
semester.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm not, because this semester I have two new preps, and I have four courses. Two of them are new preps. Next semester I have four courses, but I have no new preps. So I am in a better place next semester, although I'm also taking a course from Texas A&M. So.
Well, you're doing that this semester too, right?
No, I'm not. With my two new preps, I decided I wasn't taking anything from Texas A&M this semester.
I think the trick is I don't think we're ever going to have a semester again that's going to be easy for us. We're just all too damn busy. The trick that when I abide by this rule, I do really well. And I go through periods where it works and I go through periods where it doesn't. And this is one of my periods where I'm not doing well. But if you work on a task 30 minutes a day and then just stop after 30 minutes, it's amazing what you can get done. It's in a lot of the advice I've gotten for new faculty about making sure your research doesn't get lost in all of the other commitments and fires that you have to deal with. 30 minutes a day to work on this stuff, and we will make amazing progress on it. And like I said, when I am disciplined enough to follow that, it works really well. And the amazing thing is it's no stress. Because you just pick 30 minutes, you sit down, you do your work in that time, and then you stop, and you pick it up again the next day. So you're still dealing with everything else, but you're still making progress. So I think if we can all commit to that and use each other as accountability for that, starting in this semester and continuing into next, I think we'll be okay doing this. Which is really my way of saying, I need you girls to help hold me accountable.
Obviously, I need the help.
We all do. Life is just too busy. It's never going to slow down. So we're always going to be busy. We're always, some one of us, I guarantee, will always have some new prep that we're working on. So I think if we just agree to do it a little at a time. I think the next order of business then is simply deciding which software. So maybe we can all look at the Wikipedia list and pick something that looks good, or maybe we can each pick one thing and go out and spend 15 minutes playing with it and try and compare so that we can agree on the software, we can start to load things in, and that way it'll make it really easy to organize. Because I think if we do a good enough job taking notes on each article and making sure that those notes are in one central location that all of us can access, I think then writing the literature review itself will be very easy. I think the hard work is actually up front in just making sure that we have the notes and have a way to organize them. So for next time, should we each look at software, reference management software?
Sure.
Do you already have a list of stuff in front of you, Tara, so that we don't all pick the same one?
I do have a list in front of me.
Is it the Wikipedia table? Because I think I just found that.
Yes, so it says comparison of reference management software at the top.
Yep.
It starts with two collab.
Yep. I see it too. If you just Google reference management software, the Wikipedia thing is the first link that comes up. I definitely say we focus on the free ones.
I agree.
Especially looking at the prices of some of these. Some of these are like $300. That's ridiculous. All right, so you have free, and we need something that we can collaborate in, and I don't see if that is – that might be the type of thing we have to just play with it to see –
I'm thinking maybe the web-based ones.
Yeah.
Like there's the Jumper 2.0 that came out in March of 2009. That's web-based. It's free, and it has an open source. The something I can't pronounce, the second one on the list. What is GPL for license? Do you guys know? as opposed to proprietary?
General public license. If you click on it, it takes you to a Wikipedia article called General Public License.
Oh, okay. We probably also want something that works on Windows and Mac.
That's the list.
So there's a list below the main table that says which operating systems they work on.
There are a lot that work on both.
The export file formats, is that something we need to consider, do you think?
I don't know. The one thing that would be really nice is I know, like, with BibTeX, which is the LaTeX software manager, it formats both the inline citations and the bibliography at the end for you. So it only picks out of your database, it only picks the articles that you reference and includes them. And that way, if you delete text, it automatically deletes those references if that's the only place they were in the document. And it at least gives you your initial formatting. That's working in tech, which we probably don't want to do. I don't know if EndNote will do that for you. I think some people will say EndNote will do that for you too. So being able to output in or export to one of those things might help us when it comes to writing the paper. Especially a lit review paper where you're going to have a lot of citations. I think having something that can really manage them for us in the document, not just manage them for us for organization, but also manage them in the document, would be awesome. So that might be something we want to look at. Hang on one. So what screen would this be?
So word processor integration? Is that kind of what you're, if you read the little description above the table under word processor integration, is that kind of what you're talking about, Harla?
Maybe. Yeah, I wonder if that is what I'm talking about, and that's actually got a lot of no's on it.
We also, I assume, do we want something that does APA format?
Firefox just crashed on me. It's going to depend on where we submit. ASA has something different than APA. But if it's a good software, it'll let us define. APA is at least a good enough place to start, I think. All right. What I'm thinking of doing is I want to see how many there are that are web-based and free. 1, 2, 3, not sure, so call it 4.
I think we also want to look at the last table because we want something that's password protected, I assume.
Yeah.
And then there's the network versions, like simultaneous write access. That might... Those ones that indicate that you can have shared documents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which table is that?
That's the last table on the page.
So should we just divide the yeses on this list and everyone can go out and look at them? Was anyone else able to pull up the Wikipedia table? Do you guys have internet access right now?
Yes.
So we kind of need to look at the first table and the last table. So what's web-based and free, and what has password and simultaneous write access?
Here's what I'll do. I will spend a little time after we get off the call this morning, and I will, using this as my source, create a table of just those that are web-based and free and also have the simultaneous write access. And then using that, sorry, writing notes, can't write and talk at the same time. Using that, I will just basically divide it evenly among the four of us and then send that list out to everyone so we all know what we're supposed to be looking at. Does that sound reasonable?
And there's something weird that I just noticed is it says that Zotero wasn't passworded, but I know I needed to have a password.
Well, it may not be a perfectly updated table, but this is
that
at least...
We might not have everything on here that's correct, so I'll have to be careful of that, too.
Yeah, it's at least a good place to start. I'll start with certainly what's free and what's web-based and mark the ones that say they're also password-protected and simultaneous access so that we'll know.
Was it password-protected or was your password to get into your account?
I think you need, Jackie, did you need a password? You needed some sort of permission to view
mine,
right?
You had to invite me to join your group.
Yeah, I think you need, there's some sort of permissions within the list. Like, I don't think anyone can just go out and view it. I think the simultaneous write access is probably a bigger deal since we are all working, in different locations. But we'll work on that. I'll work on making a master list that's slightly easier to deal with than just scrolling through all of these tables. And then I will send that out today. We can divide up those, and then via email we can just decide this one looks the most promising. We'll start working in this, and we can all just start adding things a little at a time. So that's the pragmatic side. What's the content side? What should we look at for next time?
Maybe we should look at some of those articles that you had referenced.
Okay. I can also then send the full references for those. Most of them, a lot of them, I think all of them are available online. A bunch of them are even JSC articles. So I will send those references when I send the table. And we can use those as sources of other references, too. And probably just a good lit search for statistical literacy might help. All right, let's start with what I have. I'll send the table with the web-based thing so that we can set our software, so that we can start physically building this thing. And then I will also send the references that I had for today so that everyone else can take a look at those. And we'll see if they have any good references within them that are worth downloading and looking at. When do we want to talk next? I know we've got Thanksgiving coming up. So today is, where's my calendar? Today's the first Friday in November. Do we want to try and do something 2 weeks out?
How many?
2 weeks out on the 19th.
I can do that. I have another call on the 12th, but I could do the 19th.
Okay. The 26th is the day after Thanksgiving, so I'm assuming no one's going to want to make phone calls on that day. And then we're into December after that.
It'd be nice to get two more calls in before the end of the semester, so I would vote for the 19th.
All right.
19th's fine with me.
I'm looking. They put out the call for the ESCOTS posters and beyond. Didn't they say we all had to submit abstracts for that?
It's due
February 1st.
Yeah.
And just so it might be something we want to put in our minutes so we have it on our minds now.
Yeah.
I'm one of the reviewers, so I think we got a pretty good shot at getting in.
I know, we don't even have to submit anything. We'll just have Lee tell Jackie what our are.
Because isn't that what Randy said? Didn't he say everybody put in for a poster session? And then they selected one group that they wanted to do the longer presentation?
I think that's what happened last time.
I certainly don't think it could hurt us to prepare an abstract. And I think, again, we start with what we did for JSE, and we figure out how much farther are we going to be and how do we need to adjust the ads. So we start with what we did, not JSE, JSM, this past August in Vancouver when Lee presented. We start with that and then figure out, as of next May, how much farther are we going to be? And
the JSM abstract submission opens December 1st. That has to be in by February 1st, too.
Yeah. I really think the abstracts for both of these things can be the same, and then we change the talks. Or the abstracts can be very similar.
I was going to say, yeah, remember, we can really change, you know, what we actually present at JSM depending on how things go over the semester. So
do we want to work on those offline in between calls, or do we want to pick up this discussion during our next call?
I'm wondering, now we have... I mean, we know we're going to do our actual project, our study. Oh, geez. Now that we have also, we're focusing more on the statistical literacy for a literature review. We don't want to incorporate any of that into our abstracts, do we? Do we just want to keep them focused on our study? That was so incoherent. I'm sorry.
I think I know what you were saying, though. I think the abstract should still be focused more on the methodology and the results.
Okay.
As opposed to the lit review. That would be my opinion off the top of my head.
And I also think, Herla, the thing you put together for your one submission, I can't remember to what conference, could also be a good place for us to start looking, too, depending on how long.
Yeah, that was much longer because that was a two-page thing, whereas I know each of the other abstracts would be like a paragraph, but that could be a place to start. I think what we might want to do is, I think where the statistical literacy reasoning and thinking will fit into our abstract will be in our motivation, in saying it is this part of the framework. You know, this is the accepted framework. Our problem addresses this part of the framework, and this is what we're going to try and show. So since I have already done a little bit of thinking along those lines in my lit review, why don't I volunteer to put together a rough draft of an abstract, and we can talk about it at the next call.
Okay. That's a lot for you. Are you sure you want to do that much? Because you just said you were sending out the summary table.
Yeah. Well, that's all today. I'm going to try and actually get that done today, and I'm hoping that'll take me no more than an hour. And I also really think I'm probably just going to take what's on my lit review outline and kind of shape it into more abstract-friendly format. So I don't think it'll be too bad. I think I'll be okay.
Do we have anything we need to ask the research advisory board people? Is there any emails that we need to send to them asking them anything? I think we're pretty good, but
I think what might be a good idea is just to get, when they see the notes in the synthesis, let them know this is what we're thinking now, and see if they have anything to add or any comments or things like that. I don't think there's any specific questions we need to ask, though.
Okay. I'll try to type the notes up fast once I get the link.
So maybe the only question I can think of possibly to ask them is actually, Tara, what you mentioned at the very beginning, asking their opinion on that irradiation question.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point of view. That's a good point.
I mean, just kind of see if they have their opinion about it as we're thinking about it, too.
Okay.
Do you want to add that to the notes? And then we can, when we email the notes around or when we post the notes, we can highlight that that's a question in there for them?
Yeah, we can do that.
We could also possibly include that if someone, obviously we're going to have to send out an email and tell them when the next conference call is that hopefully that one of them can make. Of course, put it in there.
Right, so
this
will
give you a heads up. We're wondering about this.
Yeah. So the next call will be the 19th, November 19th at 10 a.m. Does that still work for everyone?
Yeah.
And then, so Jackie, you organized this call, right?
Correct.
So
that
then
makes
you're
sense.
A moderator. I synthesize. Who was synthesizer for this call?
That was me.
So then you are the note taker next
me,
time.
Me. Yes, I'll be the note taker next time.
Tara, you're the organizer then.
Yes.
All right, sweet. We know what we're doing. We know when we're doing it.
Yep.
I will, before the end of the day today, we'll get you that table and the references, and then we can start looking at those software. And maybe we can, could we try via email sometime next week to maybe settle on a software so that we can start working in it?
That sounds good.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Is someone going to send an email to them to tell them when the conference call is so we don't all either email them or all don't?
I can do it.
Okay.
I'll just type
sure
something up now.
Like either bombard them or at least say no this time.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay.
All right. So are we? I think we're good for this call then.
Okay.
All right. Well, everyone have a good afternoon then and a good weekend. And I'll be emailing you all later.
Okay. All righty.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.